and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd come down with anaplasmosis if you ticked me off with the idea that you missed today's show. Buy in, bitches. I gave that title to Carrie Lewis Carlson and Lara Koch as they explained how to get your boss to listen to you, to get your boss's buy-in when you get it and they don't. They're savvy, they're straightforward, and they shared tons of strategies. They're bitching. Carrie is from CLC Consulting, and Lara is at Smithsonian Institutions. This originally aired on November 9th, 2018. And process blocking your progress. Stephanie Zasyatkina wants you to pay attention to your organization's workflow. Identifying and overcoming pain points and inefficiencies will put your methods in line with your mission. She's with InReach Solutions. That's also from November 9 last year. On Tony's Take Two, I'm looking for innovators. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits, your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Here's the buy-in bitches. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 18 NTC. It's the Nonprofit Technology Conference coming to you from the Convention Center in New Orleans, Louisiana. All of our NTC interviews are sponsored by Network for Good, easy-to-use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. My guests are Carrie Lewis Carlson. Carlson? She's the owner of CLC Consulting. And Lara Koch, Associate Director of Online Fundraising at Smithsonian Institution. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
Pleasure to have you both. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Thanks for having us.
Not too many people ask how I'm doing. Good. Yeah. Have you done your session already?
Yes, we have.
Yesterday.
You're on the downside? All right.
Yep. Yes.
All right.
It's all fun from here on out.
Exactly. More alcohol. And your session topic is Real Talk, How I Got My Leadership Team to Listen to Me. All right. Buy-in.
Yes.
Leadership.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
From your session description, you had a quote, I get it. It's my boss that doesn't.
Exactly.
And if that's you talking, this session is for you. Okay. Lara, let's start with you. Why do we need this topic?
This topic came out of an NTC that Carrie and I were at 2 years ago, the one in San Jose. There was a session on the last day that turned into basically a big therapy session about the work we do and how hard it is and the things that no one really talks about.
Do you remember, Nonprofit Radio, was that the 16 NTC?
Yes.
Do you remember I don't, unfortunately. Interesting that you don't remember the topic.
I don't really remember what came out of it.
What the tangent was.
Exactly.
That took over the room.
And there was one quote, and I wish I knew who to attribute it to from that session, where someone said, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
And it really stuck with us.
And this it came out over and over about the things that we struggle with. And, you know, executive buy-in is something that comes up in almost every session you're in. But it's a mystery. It feels like, oh, just get the executive buy-in, everything will be okay. But how? You know, how is it possible? And I feel like Carrie and I are living proof that it is possible. It's a lot of hard work. And there are strategies that we've both employed to make things happen.
Okay. Carrie, you want to add something to the introductory remark?
Sure. So like Lara said, I mean, every single time we speak at a conference together, how to get your boss to let you do the things you want to do.
You've covered this topic multiple times.
Yeah.
Even if the session doesn't start out with that, it ends there.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and most people are sitting in there, they're listening to all these great ideas, they can't wait to go back and implement them, but they've got to get the okay, the budget, the time, whatever it is, and they don't know how to do it. And so that's why we wanted to talk about this. And like Lara said, it's something that people don't want to talk about because it could sound like complaining but we tried to give people actual strategies that we have used to be able to get the buy-in to do a lot of the great things we've been able to do together.
Okay, excellent. So you ladies are the buy-in mavens.
We try.
Sure.
the buy-in matrons. No, not matrons. I'm trying to think of a good alliteration to go with buy-in. The buy-in
You're not brothers. That's too bad. Okay.
I like I feel like we could use a word, but I'm not sure we can say it on non-profit radio.
We can say buy-in bitches.
That's okay. Right.
That's perfect.
That's us.
I love it. Sold. And N1019.
Awesome. Okay.
We'll be back.
It'll be the hashtag for the session.
Yes.
19 NTC.
Tony, you are setting us up.
Please do. Oh, you're coming back.
Yes.
Oh, you're coming back.
We are coming back.
19 radio. Non-profit radio. Okay. Good thinking, Lara. Okay. Okay. We got tactics. We got strategies. All right. So the problem is, you know, we feel so passionately about something, but we just can't convince the boss. Is that it?
Yes.
Is it always the C-level, or it might even just be our immediate?
Totally.
Right?
Yes.
Our immediate supervisor?
Because, you know, they're getting that pressure from the executives. You know, they're the ones often in more direct contact with them. And so when you bring an idea to them, their thought goes, they're having the same thought, is I'm going to have to tell my boss how to accomplish this, how to get this done. And often, you know, that immediate negativity or that immediate reactive no is the first thing you hear. Yeah.
And people have trouble asking for what they need.
And then can I just say, it's so hard to overcome that initial no.
Yes.
Like, you know, wait, but you hardly even heard anything. I hardly even made my case yet, and it's already a no. And then to try to overcome that, it's very hard.
And because because nonprofits tend to be, you know, such a hierarchy, and there is so much emotion and passion in the work we do, many people hear that no, and they back off.
Yeah, right, they're done.
Carrie, you were making a point that I interrupted. Go ahead, please.
Well, I also wanted to say, like, one of the things that I was able to show was that I was able to get that full-on buy-in relationship, the trust, all of that with my immediate boss when I was at HSUS. And he was really an advocate and, backed me up on a lot of my ideas that were able to sell to the executives, which were much harder. And I admitted this in the session. I never fully got that buy-in and goal agreement and all those things with our executive suite in the 11 years I was there. Yeah. There was just there's different priorities, different, you know,
generations?
I was going to say that, but...
You could say that. Why not?
No, it's true. I think generational...
We already said bitches. We can distinguish across age if we can say bitches.
Generational shifts in the workplace. Nonprofits are so unprepared for this, and it is hurting them now because they don't know, like, our generation doesn't know how to relate to our C-level executives who have been there for 20 years, and they have different way of looking at things, different priorities, and it causes this clash.
Okay. All right. Let's get into some of our tactics.
Great.
Tactics, strategies. We could use those interchangeably, or do you distinguish?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Think so. Yeah.
Okay. Lara, let's start.
The number one thing, and, you know, this came up on every slide that we did, was being relentless about being in people's faces and having a shtick. Basically, every time you're in a meeting, you're repeating the same stats and you're asking the same things over and over.
So you need consistency in your own messaging.
Yes, exactly.
And not giving up.
Right.
When you hear no. That was one thing. I think that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It's like, my boss says no, well, I'm not going to challenge them. Oh, but you should, because you have good ideas and you need to advocate for them.
And you're the ones in the trenches. You're the ones doing the work. You're the ones in... conferences like this, you're seeing what your colleagues are doing in the space, and you want to apply those things, and that no without a no but or a no and. And I think that's where, you know, Carrie and I got the idea of basically going in really prepared, you know, anticipating questions and pushback, anticipating the no, and coming up with strategies to, you know, say, here's how we're going to do it. Here's what we're going to do if we fail. Here's what we're going to do if we're going to succeed. And then if you hear that no, is it, can I just try it once and we see how it goes? Can we test it? Because the data will out. And I told the group, like, I love when tests fail. I want to be wrong because then I can let it go. I can say, okay, I thought it would work. It didn't. Okay. I'm going to let it go. And that's why, you know, but at least we got to try.
It's time for a break. Wegner CPAs, does your accountant return your calls and emails? Do they keep to their deadlines? Do you like them? Are they nice people to work with? Are they keeping mistakes to a minimum? If these aren't all yeses, then maybe it's time to look for a replacement. You know a partner at Wegner CPAs, Yiit Uchtdoom, been on the show many times, he's going to be coming back early next year. You start at WegnerCPAs.com, check them out, and then ring them up. Give them a call. Talk to Yiit, see if Wegner can help you. WegnerCPAs.com. Now back to buy-in bitches.
Then how do you feel with respect to your relationship with your boss after you advocated for something and it failed?
Oh, I can talk about that.
Please.
This happens a lot, and it's so important to be comfortable with and accepting and saying that this, it's fine that it failed, but here's what we learned, and we'll do this differently next time. Last Giving Tuesday, right before I left.
But I want to focus on your relationship with your boss.
Mm. Right.
You pushed, and let's say there was an initial no, and then taking your advice, you challenged it. You got a buy-in for a test. It failed, but you were the advocate for the failure.
Yeah.
How does that? How do you feel about the impingement on your relationship with your boss? How do you deal with your boss after that? That's what I want to get at.
Well, it depends. Like that's kind of where the early work of developing the relationship and the trust and all of that with your boss and your executives or whoever the decision maker is so important, because I had a good relationship with my boss and I had spent years on goal agreement and trust and brainstorming and all of these things that connected us, he is of the mindset of, okay, well, here are all the great ideas you've had and executed. One that didn't work, it's bound to happen. And I think that oversimplifies it, but that homework of developing that relationship with your boss ahead of time.
The value of the long-term relationship.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And building on those small, easy wins, if that's what you need to lay that groundwork, but and taking ownership of your failures. You know, Carrie has a great example that she was going to mention about Giving Tuesday, where she was convinced something was going to work. They put it into practice. It did fail, and Carrie took ownership. She said, I thought this would work. It didn't. Here's what we learned. Here's what we're going to do.
Instead of getting defensive.
You were going to tell the Giving Tuesday, but I interrupted you.
No, it's so, okay.
I know it's okay. I'm the host.
Exactly. Okay. This is your thing.
I don't need permission. Right. But I'm acknowledging it. Let's leave it there. You don't have to beat me up
over it. All right.
Let's move on.
Okay, yeah. Move on.
Really?
So I came up with the idea of giving away little portable dog bowls if you got your donation in ahead of time for Giving Tuesday. As we found from years past that some people do want to get their gifts in early, which I find strange, but, you know, they have their reasons, and the data showed that. So I said,
and where
well,
were you with the dog bowl? What kind of organization were you? Why were dog bowls?
With the Humane Society.
Oh, Humane Society.
Yeah. Okay. So naturally, I was like this. I was really excited about it. Well, they gave away maybe 100 of them. There are still 3,000 of them in someone's cube at HSUS. And I was like, guys, I thought this was going to work, and it didn't. Don't do it next year.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And they're not going to. Okay.
But we did it, and,
that's
you know.
Not, wait, that's not the reason you're no longer at Humane
I hope
right,
not.
Is it?
No.
That Giving Tuesday debacle? No. Okay.
But good. I know those bowls are still sitting in someone's cube.
Well, and we
it's
were
a very pet-friendly organization.
Yes. Yeah. They'll get used to them
office,
somehow.
They will get used.
Yeah.
You know, and we were both honest in our session that, you know, we had those wins, we had those failures, but in the end, both of us did leave. We both worked at the Humane Society together.
Oh, okay.
Both of us did leave because in the end, you know, we made some progress, but you know, it wasn't enough, and those battles with our executives did wear us down eventually.
And the first question that somebody asked at the end of this session was, how do you deal with all of this work and all of this emotional toll that this obviously takes on someone to be constantly fighting for your ideas and your staff and all of that? Like Lara said, we both ended up leaving for this reason, because you've got to know when you can't do anymore.
Right. You know, and that's the thing. Again, we're all here for causes. We're all here because we're passionate people. You know, our jobs are so emotional, full of so much emotional labor, which I think makes work nonprofit work really interesting. And, you know,
because you care.
Right. And that is, you know, like I said, that's where all of our sessions, especially when we present together, tend to end up, because, you know, we're proud of what we've accomplished. We've had some incredible wins, some incredible successes. But, you know, that work is constant. And because nonprofit online and digital marketing and fundraising changes every single day, it is not something like a direct mail where it's pretty consistent. It's pretty, you know, nothing really changes there. Facebook works one day. Based on what's going on right now, who knows what's going to happen for Facebook tomorrow.
Right, the platforms do change. All right, let's go into more strategies. You got one, Carrie?
Well, I touched on this, but one of the biggest kind of strategies for me was getting that visibility. I was relentless about getting into staff meetings and executive meetings and being that person that they recognize, so that when I came knocking on the door asking for something, they were like, well, you know, Carrie has good ideas and she is smart and well-respected or whatever. So that, you know, I told the audience, like, if you're one of those people that wants to work from home 4 days a week, you're going to have trouble selling your ideas because you've got to be around and the executives need to know you. And with that comes trust and build a repertoire and all of that.
That's interesting. My last conversation was just about virtual employees and having a virtual organization. So you feel like in this realm, virtual employees are at a disadvantage?
If they are in leadership roles where they're selling ideas and managing staff, and look, like, flexibility, it was the number one reason why I stayed so long where I was. I'm a mom. I want to be able to do things on my own time. But if I was not there pushing for what I wanted, advocating for my staff, them knowing who I was, because that's how our management was. It was very management by walking around. Like, you know, you have to be seen there.
Being seen was important. Yeah.
Okay. And that's another thing where that generational shift really comes into play. Maybe we'll all be remote employees, you know, 15 years from now. But right now in the nonprofit space where, again, that hierarchy is so deeply grooved in, you know, it's being visible. And, you know,
the point that the two women who were just in the last interview made was, it really is, it depends on organizational culture.
That
even trumps age.
Mm-hmm. You know,
if the organization has a culture that empowers virtual employees, then they may not have disadvantage that you're talking about, Carrie.
Exactly, right? You're right.
It's organizational culture.
Yep. But,
okay. Let's get more strategies for challenging your boss, or you suggested maybe it's a no and, mm-hmm, or a no but. We can test.
Right.
So that covers sort of the challenge of the overcoming the no. What are the tactics, strategies?
You should talk about data because you're the data queen.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to data. And I think a point, you know, having that data, having those stats at the tip of your tongue, you know, stats that you're repeating all the time, and, you know, getting... executives love numbers. Very often they don't love the same numbers that we love. You know, they're very focused on different numbers.
Yeah.
So it's focused on using numbers that mean something to them. Of course, a lot of those are budget numbers and revenue and opportunity costs. Carrie has done a lot of work where, you know, for redesigning the website, for example, when we were able to work with the vendor that's redesigning that website and identify, this is the money we're leaving on the table right now.
By having an old website.
Right. Those stats make sense to our executives. Even if vanity metrics, which breaks both mine and Carrie's heart, vanity social metrics, you can weave those in with the data that also matters.
Is relevant.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. You know,
you train them over time.
Well,
they will care about
it. It's that spoonful of sugar that makes the medicine go down.
Well, we do have 12,000 followers. No. Okay. So weave that in a little bit. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. You know,
give them some of what they want.
Exactly. Capture their attention.
And more of what they need.
Right.
Because you know what if you're the data expert in the organization, you know what's germane.
Yes.
So give them a little of what they want and more of what they need.
And percentages.
Yes, and percentage, you know, exactly. You know, because, for example, Smithsonian redesigned their website last year, and I was able to get a donation button on the website, which is a big win. In the first 6 weeks of that donation button being on the site, we saw a 6,000% increase in donations.
Yes.
Those numbers were super tiny, but 6,000% mentioned casually to my boss in the hallway made me look like a superstar. And then they could repeat that elsewhere. But it's being, you know, an example, one of our favorite examples was what we consider our magnum opus at the Humane Society was our first Day of Giving. And Day of Giving came as a directive and says, you know, oh, we see universities doing Days of Giving everywhere. Just do one. And it has to be unrestricted. We love unrestricted fundraising, but we knew a Day of Giving out of nowhere in the middle of what is our biggest lull month around spring, March, was going to be a hard sell. We knew we had a restricted program that you know, touched on all the things that our constituents loved at HSUS, being pets, being people's relationship with their pets, helping people in underserved communities get vet care for their pets. We put together a PowerPoint that laid everything out from start to finish, including a mixture of vanity metrics and actual metrics, and things like, here's what we do if we fail, here's what we do if we succeed. We went in armed to the teeth, saying, okay, we'll do this, but this is how we're going to do it. And we did, and we were, and also that we need to go dark in everything else we're doing so we can launch this huge campaign just mere months after our year-end fundraising campaign.
Nice.
And,
right.
You know, we went in like an army, and we were able to get that message through.
Is
because
the two of you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was the bitches?
It was the bitches.
It and was, right. And we did it.
Right. And we did it, and it was a huge success.
It was
but
$500,000.
Yes, and repeating that in other ways, you know, through other campaigns has allowed us to just, you know, go in almost with an impenetrable armor to and confidence. You
confidence.
Know?
That's a tough one for a lot of people.
Yeah. Talk about it more. Why is it so
important? I think because people are afraid of being told no, or that's a bad idea, or they're just afraid of the rejection
or
piece
failing.
Of it. Or failing. And if you don't have that culture of innovation and trust and all of that, that can be really intimidating. But I think after a while, we start to gain our confidence after we have good ideas and we implement them and they work and we want to do more.
Yes.
But I think that's a hard one for a lot of people to have that confidence to go in and say, we're going to do this, or to your boss, no, that's a terrible idea, which.
Yeah. And
did.
We had 6-7 people come up to us after and tell their own individual stories of their immovable CEOs. You know, and they, you know, they thanked us for what we talked about, but still you could see the fear in their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart, because, again, these are people who want, we are doing mission based work, and we know how we can do it better because we are doing it every single day.
And that's the confidence you need to go in with.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to embrace that.
Yes.
Yeah, and say we are going to do this. Like when I decided that it was time to pick up the website redesign at HSUS, I went to my boss and I said, I'm going to do this year. I know the money's there. We're going to make this happen, and I need an outside project manager. I didn't go in and say, hey, I'd really like to redesign the website. What do you think? You know, and that also helped him, because it's like, I'm not going to him. That was another one of our tactics. Go in with a solution, not just a problem. And that takes a lot of the weight and a lot of the monkey off your boss's back. And that builds trust too, because it's like, they've got this.
Now you brought me a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and my boss used to always say that to me. Come to me with a solution, not a problem. And then that really also developed that relationship of trust, because he knew that I would handle things.
Yes.
Now, is CLC working with Smithsonian?
We are not. We are
not
just
working together anymore?
Not yet. I will say yet. You know, hopefully in the future. But,
okay,
you know, we...
To get her in?
I would love that, because she's a dynamo.
Yeah.
But, you know, the bond that we formed working together allowed us to kind of build that confidence off of one another. You know, we both have different strengths, you know, we were able to move mountains at a place that is, like I said, it's
old school.
It's old school.
Yeah. Now it sounds like you suffered together. There's this recognized social science concept. I learned it as a brotherhood of suffering, but it can equally apply as a sisterhood of suffering. Prison isn't, I don't mean to analogize HSUS to a prison, but prison is an example.
We'll take it. It's fine.
Okay. I have something I want to chat with you after. Because I know somebody very senior there. So prison, you know, imagine what you're suffering together, and the common suffering day in, day out, creates a bond.
Yes.
It sounds like that.
Well, that was another one of our tactics.
Was
creating
Don't hold back on nonprofit.
Creating a like a mini culture within our department of trust and all of the things that we wish we had as a larger organization.
Within
you build them within the department,
yeah. Right.
And you do create this bond.
So work within your microcosm.
Yes.
Yes. And you know. Manage down, you know, manage up, but also manage down like you wish you were being managed down upon.
Yeah.
Encourage people to come to ideas. Let them know it's okay to fail. Let them know that, you know, they're doing different work than we are as their managers. So they're seeing things that we're not seeing. Like something I tell my team now at the Smithsonian is, you know, if I want you to come to me and say, if my plate was clear, this is what I would be focusing on, because I know this would move the needle.
Don't you wish one of our executives would have ever said anything like that
yes.
to us?
because I would give him a, I would roll out the scroll. It would roll down the hallway.
Red carpet.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but I want to hear that because, you know, I'm spending so many plates all the time, trying to, you know, be in this middle management role, like I am. And I want to be able to, that my team feels empowered to do that. And I think right now there are still ceilings that prevent that. And the, you know, nonprofits again have, you know, we tend to respect the CEOs as being, or, you know, and that C level as, you know, the end all be all.
Right.
And they're not, you know, we were able to do in our world. And I think this is especially true for nonprofit marketing and fundraising is that, you know, it's, if you're not living it, you're not truly understanding it. And until executives see that and give you that leeway and you're negotiating with them constantly about what you're doing and what you know you can do, only then do you even start to inch forward.
Another thing I did while I was in a leadership role at HSUS, it sounds kind of silly, but I gave each one of my employees their birthday off. And that's really cool. They get to have an extra day off and whatnot. But what it's really about is showing that I trust them enough to take a day off that they're still going to get their work done. And that's the kind of like an example of the kind of thing that was in our control. You would never get your birthday off, I think, as an overall level there. That's just, it's a culture of like a lot of nonprofits. Work always on.
You need to be seen.
Yes.
You were saying before, Lara, you need to be seen.
But our employees knew that we trusted them enough that they could take a day off. And I was adamant. And the question that came at the end about how do you deal with all of this, the emotional labor that goes into it, it's about creating that balance, being relentless about self-care and work-life balance. Like, it is achievable. A lot of times we do it to ourselves because we care so much. But creating boundaries with your team, your executives, is that that's how you have to, that's what you have to do in order to keep doing all of this work.
Also this idea, please hold your, please don't lose that thought. This idea of doing as much as you can within your, within what you do have within your purview.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do as much as you can for the people you do have authority over. Yeah, please. Yeah,
advocating for your staff.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is being relentless and going back to that repetition. You know, a badge of honor that I wear is I was in a meeting recently with a strategic planning meeting with a lot of different people, of course, the organization, many of them higher level from me. And at one point, someone stopped me and said, "We know how you feel about email collection, Lara." And I was like, "Great, I'm glad you do. It's because I've been saying it nonstop. So even if you're annoyed with me for saying it every time, you're finally listening to me because you know what's not happening at the Smithsonian? Email collection."
Yet.
So let's talk about that, okay. You know, and luckily I feel like Carrie and I are good with people. So we tend to not come off as harsh. We tend to come off more as just assertive versus aggressive. But, you know, I've had to learn that assertiveness in my work life because it didn't come naturally to me. It's something that I learned, and once I saw the progress I was able to make by getting in people's faces, being super, you know, straight and blunt and repetitious, and, you know, making that eye contact with them, you know, it's a skill that I've tried to learn and I've tried to give to my team as well, because, you know, we're all in these cruise ships and we're trying to make these turns all the time, and things move very, very, very slow.
I'm trying to avoid sinking.
Yes, before those icebergs.
Trying to avoid a bow shot. Yes. Okay. We're going to leave it there. You two are terrific.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I love your energy.
It was a pleasure.
I feel the bond between you.
Yes.
They're the buy-in bitches.
Buy-in bitches.
You heard, hear it here first. They are Carrie Lewis Carlson, owner of CLC Consulting, and Lara Koch, Associate Director of Online Fundraising at Smithsonian Institution. We are nonprofit radio. Covering 18 NTC, and this interview sponsored by Network for Good, easy-to-use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
My pleasure, too. And thank you very much for being with our coverage.
We need to take a break. Cougar Mountain Software is designed from the bottom up for nonprofits. Simple to use, phenomenal support. Can you say that about your accounting software? If you're using QuickBooks, Quicken, TurboCash, Workday, Zoho, Yet. Give it a test ride. Cougar Mountain has a 60-day free trial. You'll find that on the listener landing page at tony.ma/cougarmountain. Now time for Tony's Take Two. Are you an innovator? Are you bucking conventional wisdom and tradition? Perhaps tackling something differently and showing success? That part's important, the success part. If so, then let's talk, because you might be part of our Innovators series that I'm going to be hosting in early 2020. If it's not you, do you know an innovator, innovative colleague, friend? You or they, get in touch with me. Use Tony at tonymartinetti.com, please, or they can use, or you, use the contact page at tonymartinetti.com. I want to meet innovators, people tackling things differently and succeeding at it. Doesn't matter what the subject is, program, fundraising, marketing, brand, identity, board management. If you're an innovator and you're successful, please get in touch. And that is Tony's Take Two. Now it's time for Process Blocking Your Progress.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 18NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference, coming to you from New Orleans. This interview is sponsored by Network for Good, easy-to-use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. My guest is Stephanie Zasiakina. She is Director of InReach Solutions, and her workshop topic is When Process Blocks Progress, Workflow Efficiency for Nonprofits. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Tony.
What was the need for this this topic? Why do we have to talk about this? Why are workflows important?
So we are a small agency for case management system for nonprofits. We work in child welfare, and what we do a lot is implement the software with the agency, right?
Okay.
A lot of these agencies they struggle with understanding what they do. It's like you do it on a regular basis, but you don't necessarily know how to communicate it. So when you're putting it into a digital format, into a software, we actually have to know what you're doing in order to get the results that you're looking for out in reports and things like that.
Okay.
Right? And so if they can't communicate it clearly, it's hard to know where their pain points are, where to help them. And some people just aren't prepared for that, especially the small agencies. They don't have the staff on hand that have done kind of analysis of what their current processes are.
All right. So what do we need to help nonprofits do better then? What they need to better understand what their processes are.
They
Is
do.
That right? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely want to know how what they're be able to communicate where they're at to understand where they want to go.
Their processes, their workflow.
Their workflow.
We're talking about the stuff they do day to day.
Yes.
You were describing.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. How do we help them do this? How do we help them are we looking first for the pain points, or are we just trying to understand what the flows are first?
Yeah, trying to understand what the flows are. The pain points often come out
in that.
Absolutely, in that discussion.
Okay, so are we mapping the processes? How do we identify what our workflows are?
Yes, so it would be lovely to...
I'm not asking the right question?
Or what? Yeah, no.
What? Yeah. She's like, oh boy, I better say something, this is radio.
Just make sure, do I understand what you're saying?
Like,
yes.
Yeah, so, is that what we do? Do we map the workflows?
Absolutely, yeah. And a lot of that comes out through a discussion of like, what do you do? I don't want to phrase this. It oftentimes, people are so familiar with what they're doing that when they're talking, when I ask questions about it, they can't describe it. They're not actually sure sometimes. They don't have the right people in the room they're not getting a full picture.
Yeah.
And so it involves a lot of people on the team and their different perspectives in order to get the full picture so that we know in the software, what are we planning to do for them? Like, do we want to automate some of the pieces? What are we trying to do to improve? They're coming to us for a reason.
Improve their processes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So often technology is blamed for problems when really it's the processes around the technology and maybe even some of the people that are the difficulties. It's not the technology.
No. It might be the technology. I don't necessarily.
Sometimes
sometimes
technology is erroneously blamed.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they're not really sure what the process is and where either pain points are or where maybe even where they're successful in something. And what do they want to continue to keep when they move to the next piece of software?
Okay. And right? This all relates down to efficiency. Right?
Absolutely. I mean,
we want to be more efficient, effective.
Right.
And we can only do that by being introspective about what it is we're doing.
And it's not even that everything is completely about efficiency. I mean, that's going to like help with the bottom line and with staying in budget. But I think does your process actually reflect your mission is important as well. So there are definitely things where we've done internal processes for my organization that we've changed, and we're choosing not to make videos, let's say, to make things super efficient and not cost so much, because our mission is to empower organizations and to really like partner with them and work with them. So we're actually we've chosen to speak live, you know, with our clients, and because we feel like that's really, really important, rather than sending them off to just support guides all the time, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Right? So it's like you need both. Not only are you looking for efficiencies, which definitely is going to be a value for your organization, but
it's mission-centric too.
Yep, okay. Absolutely. Okay.
All right. So if we do want to identify our workflows and then pain points that will emerge from that, what we have technology to, or is it, you said based on discussions. How do we start to work? How do we start to map our flows of information and work through the office?
So we actually, like in the workshop, what we're going to talk about is...
Oh, you haven't done yours yet?
No, it's tomorrow. Tomorrow at 3.
Oh, your last day, so you're still...
Or at 1:30,
You're still thinking about it.
Always thinking about
this.
Because
some people have already finished theirs.
Right, sure.
You haven't yet.
Okay, no, not yet. Okay, no, okay. I've still got to go.
So you still have to be good tonight. Okay.
Last but not least.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Good times.
So how do we get this started?
So the way that we like to do it, we've watched, there's this really excellent TED Talks by a man named Tom Wojcik.
Okay.
And he talks about taking a really simple process so that people understand why it's even important to do process mapping. And he does it with toast, right? So something that we're all fairly familiar with is like, how do you make toast? Taking that. And so that's what within the workshop we're going to do is diagramming toast to get people all on the same page that we understand that we're regularly building process. And then it's interesting because then every action item that you would do to move your process from step one to step Z.
Okay.
You will. You can sticky note it, and when we sticky note, then we have the ability to be flexible with our process.
All right, who's in the room when we're doing this? See, because listeners don't have the benefit of being at your workshop. That's why I'm here.
Yep,
expanding
totally. Expanding
you to another 12,000 people, who some of whom may be here, but not all of them. Obviously. So. They're not going to see your toast diagram.
Totally,
toast workflow.
But this is something that you can take.
Okay, all right. So we have sticky notes. Who belongs in the room when we start doing this?
Key stakeholders are in the room. So it can be executive level, but I think it's also the people who are literally doing the work. They need to be heard and understood because there may be points of the process.
Like nobody knows they're even
They don't
doing.
Know that they're doing.
I'm taking information from Jessica and bringing that in, but well, how do you get that information? Well, I just call her up, or I send her an email and tell her that I need the info now for these three cases.
Right.
And
we
then,
have an.
And then later today, I'll need some more. It's like totally informal, and the C-suite doesn't know that's going on.
Exactly. No, they don't know. We've had a client recently that
not that I thought your name is Jessica. I know your name is Stephanie.
Oh no.
By the way, I don't know why I just thought of
Jessica.
I thought
you were just pulling a random name anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Good. It was random. I didn't think your name was Jessica.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. No, so we have a client that literally walks from their office, paperwork, over to another office. They literally walk. So we're like, this is amazing. You're going to save 500 steps every day. You're going to have to find another way to get those steps in for your counters, whatever. But
okay.
Anyway.
Okay. So in the room, for your Fitbit, so in the room, we have a whiteboard and we have post-it notes and we have all the stakeholders and all the people, instead of stakeholders, the people doing the work.
People doing the work.
And then we also have senior staff. All right. And we're taking a process. Like, what? How do we define a process?
So, I like to think of it in sections. So, don't think of it necessarily like top to bottom. Group it into like parts of the process. So, make it understandable and relatable really quickly, so that you can start to drill down more into more complex processes, because a lot of times processes are nested, right? So during a licensing process, let's say, you would, part of it is getting background checks, part of it is getting documentation, part of it is signing documentation, part of it is writing a home study, and then you're going to like take it up to the state. Okay. Yeah. There's lots of different processes. And before we just say, okay, we do 1, 2, 3, that might be a good way to go about it, is just ordering what you can do. I like to section it so that it's more manageable chunks. That makes sense.
Okay. So of course it does. And then put the chunks together.
Yes.
You'll see the whole top to bottom.
Right. Then you will see everything together. And because it becomes very overwhelming if you look at the whole process, right? And we work with adoption and foster care agencies. Licensing is one part of that process. So it's knowing, when does licensing come in? What happens before? What happens after? But looking at one chunk at a time so that you can organize that.
Okay.
And then when you've got, okay, for step one of the licensing process is we send some email to a family. We then can use that on a sticky note and talk about that as like, how is that getting done? Is that sent through email? Are we mailing? Why would we mail versus send an email? And so you start to have discussions, and probably, like you said, executive level may not have any idea that actually paper mail is actually going out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That all the packets are in different locations, or the documentation that needs to go in that packet might be, you know, there's things that start to come to light that aren't necessarily known by everybody as the stakeholder, everybody who should be in the room.
Okay. And then after we've done our map of a process, what are well, you said a lot of conversations are going to emerge out of this, out of the mapping exercise, right? And
yeah, for
so
sure.
Pain points,
mm-hmm.
my voice cracked, sorry, like I'm 14. Some pain points are going to emerge, and that's where we can maybe apply some technology to make things more efficient for us.
Certainly, yeah.
Or at least change the, you know, or maybe the process even shouldn't change, but we need to understand why we're doing it this way. Is there a good reason for doing it this way? And is there a reason for not changing? I mean, that happens sometimes too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not that everything in your process needs to change. A lot of times you got where you are because your process is working. It's mm-hmm. just, there's some reason that drove you to need to look at your process, or like, you know, here we are at this technology conference. A lot of times it is to adopt a new technology because something doesn't quite feel right. Yeah.
This white hair on my sweater. Believe this? I can't pull this thing off. There it is.
Happening.
It's so close. I have this white hair on my sweater. I can't get it off. All right, I got it now. All right. Because it's so close. I can't see it. Right. It's so close. You see it double. And I kept grabbing the fake one. All right. I got it. Little host digression. Okay, so there's more to say about this. I mean, so I know part of your presentation is going to be mapping Toast, or the Toast journey, but we're not going to do that here.
No, we're not.
It's time for our last break. Turn to Communications, PR and content for your nonprofit. They help you tell your compelling stories and get media attention on those stories, all while building support for your work. They do media relations, content marketing, communications and marketing strategy, and branding strategy. You will find them at turn-2.co. We've got buttloads more time for process blocking your progress.
But we still have another, you know, 10 or 15 minutes together. So what are we going to, what more do small and mid-sized nonprofits need to know about this, the workflow process, so that they can scrutinize their own?
I mean, it's important. No, going into it, it can be a difficult discussion. It is always important to bring in all the players, right? And really, even though we on the radio aren't doing that exercise, it is an excellent exercise to open up people's minds to that we all understand how to diagram.
Can we talk about it? Can we talk through the Toast example?
Totally. No, I don't think it has to be visual.
All right, so this is we're using this as an example of how to map your own workflow processes, right?
Yes,
right?
Exactly. And okay. it's a like an exercise that you can literally do this exercise with your team. So it feels kind of like, why would I do this? But it brings laughter, it brings cohesion, and it also brings an understanding of oh, we all see things from different perspectives. And when we actually talk about it and get it out in the open, we can see that and then improve our process. Because that might have been some of the problem, is that you don't actually know what other people are doing.
All right, I'm a little skeptical that Toast is going to bring all this out.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead. You're the facilitator. Get us started.
So the first part of the program, or the exercise, is going to be to actually diagram Toast. What? With a piece of paper,
okay. Yeah.
And you are going to draw an image of how Toast goes from, you know, a piece of bread to Toast, and whatever it might be. So for me, I use a toaster. In other countries, they use a sauté pan.
They do?
In
Europe. That make toast in mm-hmm. sauté pan?
Right. At the end of the toast, maybe you just want to eat it plain and dry. Maybe some people don't. Maybe they put butter on it. Maybe they put jelly. I did this presentation in California earlier. There was a gentleman from Australia. He puts Vegemite, right? It's like, what are the different people bringing?
Okay.
Some people look at these examples as very people-centric. Some people are very, very detailed. Some people keep it real simple.
Well, I mean, included in this, you have to go to the pantry or the refrigerator where you store your bread.
Right.
Right. I mean, you got to get the substance first.
Some people may not remember that step. And what's interesting, I actually just spoke with a client.
Is this very good that I thought of that step?
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, my God. Okay. Yes.
So, so I just spoke with a client who's actually used the example in her nonprofit setting, in the foster care agency she works with. And what she found was interesting is that she now knows kind of how people think, like how they think about what they're doing and what do they need, right? So she gave a really great example of one of the women needed all of the resources. Before I get started, I need to have the jelly, I need to have the toast, I need to have the plate, and right, whatever
she's a planner,
and that opened her eyes to how to better communicate with that person, because not everybody comes at it that way. When I draw the toast, I get the plate in the middle. I also, like, we always joke about this, I'm like, I'm a single mom, so I'm like doing the dishes when the toast is down. I'm doing something else because I've got to be super efficient.
Okay. Right? All right. So there's other value in this too.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding people's work personalities.
Exactly.
All right. What we got to tease this out a little more.
Yeah, totally.
But I want value, not just not just filler. So what else? All right. So in terms of what else have you learned from this?
So then step two is to then take all of these action items, make them into sticky notes, right?
Okay, so then the next step.
And so the point of the sticky notes is our brains actually work better with...
What goes on the sticky notes?
All of the action items.
Like
walk to the refrigerator.
Pull out the bag.
Bring the knife out. Get the jelly. Get the bread. Push down the toaster, right? If you forget any of those steps, you have an opportunity to actually include them. You can also reorganize them. So if you find that it's more efficient to get the plate and the jelly and the toaster and the bread and all of these resources beforehand, you can move them from where I had them right in the middle right up to the front, which means that you might need a pantry to store all these things, right? So, like, how can you make that part more efficient?
Sometimes your eyes roll the back of your head. And it's unbelievable.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God! You know, you just did this twice.
I'm sorry.
When you're thinking.
When I'm thinking.
First time I thought you were having a stroke.
No. Okay, I'm sorry.
Your eyes roll back and everything is white.
No, you know, I do
all,
a lot.
It's all white.
I don't. Just do recently that? Started doing.
No,
webinars.
It's not crossing, but it's like they're rolling back like a stroke. How do you do that?
I have no idea.
It's all white. Everything becomes white there. It's just eyelashes and white.
It's creepy.
No, you probably can't do it consciously, but
probably
it's
not.
When you're thinking.
Yeah,
thinking.
It's going real
first
deep.
First time I let it go, but the second
and
time.
And now you're going to call it out.
Right.
Thanks. Probably nobody noticed.
Well,
but now everybody's going to know
not
my eyes turn white.
Certainly not the 12,000 podcast listeners.
Okay.
No, they definitely did not notice. okay. All right, so we have fun here at Nonprofit Radio. I mean, because you're not going to have fun, then why the hell bother?
Why
the hell bother? I mean, I dragged my ass all the way here. Oh, my ass, I said ass. That might be, I don't. All the way, to New Orleans. I mean, we're going to have some fun.
It's a great city.
Okay, I know it is, but I wouldn't have been here if it weren't for NTC.
Me too.
I'd probably be on the beach in North Carolina where I live. Yeah. Anyway, okay, that's a host digression again. all right, so we're at the post-it note stage. Every little step. And then you can decide, you can reorder.
You can reorder. So Tom says that the ease with which we can reorder, it makes us more likely to improve the process, right? We're more willing to improve. We're willing to change things when it feels feasible and easy to do that. If it feels like, you know, my team member created a diagram on some program, right? So it's got the arrows, like PowerPoint or something, right? Okay. Like she's did this, all this work to make this process look like that. I'm less likely to go and tear up all her work. But sticky notes are real easy. They're real cheap. They're very, like, budget friendly, obviously, for organizations. And this toast exercise really, again, just allows you to be free flowing with it. Part three.
Okay.
Let's move on to part three. Okay. Is then to take everybody's individual sticky notes and put them together. So now you're actually building cohesion. You're hearing actually what other people want.
So you're putting them up on the board and trying to rationalize them all into the same process.
Exactly.
But some people have some steps and other people skip those steps. And
totally. They might not plug in the toaster.
Yeah.
Well, nothing's going to happen if you press that down, right? And so it's like you can pull all the pieces. This is where someone is walking, you know, the folder from one organization to another. You realize that you didn't realize that was actually happening before. Yeah. So you finally get to hear everybody's voice.
Okay. Is there a step four?
No. Well, so that's the exercise. But then the thing is yes, step four, I guess, yes. Let me retract what I said. Okay. Yes, there is a step four, is to do this with your own processes, right? So to look at this really complex process, you need to organize it into smaller chunks that are more manageable, right? And then you can diagram it, you can sticky note it, you can work together and bring in where what the program manager believes that the process is, and then the people who might actually be doing that process and hearing. Like I brought up this home study or the licensing process. There are certainly program managers that are approving. They might initiate part of the process. They are connecting that process with the case manager, with the social worker. All these people are coming together to make this process happen. There's also external factors like the state agency or the back where the background checks are being done, or the people who have to approve the home study. So there's all these people at play, and it really helps to bring a fuller circle, because the program manager might only be connected with the case manager and the social worker, but these people are connected to the state agencies. And where does the family come involved, right? So you're being able to see everybody. See,
very holistic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, in your own organizations, if you're not doing this kind of work, there may be processes that you're just not comfortable with. I mean, maybe even before you identify specific pain points, you just know that something's not right about the way we, I don't know, acknowledge and process donations and send acknowledgments.
Yeah.
You know, there's something that it takes us too long. It feels like it's harder for us than it is for my friends in other organizations. So that might be a rationale for applying this process to that process, you know, applying this exercise to that process.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Really, I mean, Tony, you can also, I mean, we're always doing process. So I love this book. I might get the title a little bit wrong, but it's like the life-changing magic of tidying up. Okay. And she actually discusses process in our life. It's just like spring cleaning every year. But she organizes all of your items in your house into certain groups. Then you take out what's not needed. You hold it up, right? And so I've talked about the mission. It's like holding it up to you. Do I feel joy when I touch this item? If not, it's gone. It's no longer part of the process. So like part of the process, I guess, when you're combining and you're finding that cohesion with all your team members, is going back and aligning with your mission, and even the mission or the mission of whatever project you're working on, right? So if it is your donations and acknowledgments, you're wanting to get those out, making sure that aligns with how you run your organization, the values of your organization.
And how you value your donors.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, because a lot of times donors are multifaceted in how they work with your organization. So they're not just offering funds to you. Like, they might be board members. They might have been volunteers. Some of the agencies that we work with, they might have been families. So how are you touching all of these people who have multiple connections to your organization?
Yes. Okay. And I like how you bring it back to mission also. I mean, that mission...
It's so important. It's,
whatever this process is that you're being introspective. Really, this is organizational introspection, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this is the way I see it. You're taking a deep look at yourself as an organization. How do you work?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I mean, like I said too, right? So I didn't want to throw in that that book just because it felt really good. It's just like you would do spring cleaning annually. You've got to constantly go back to this. So sometimes your mission might be stale. Your people aren't feeling it. I mean, you just have a sense if you're in the organization.
It's not that the mission is stale.
It could be. There is potential for that, right? So it may or may not. One of the things certainly in the workshop that we're going to talk about is actually making people also relate to the mission. So just like the process of mapping out what your process is, making it possible so that your team actually feels the mission, that they relate to it. That's not an abstract idea if it is a top down or as you've added people into your organization. Over time, though, it could be.
Your mission may have become less relevant.
Totally.
Or you may have strayed from it.
Yep.
Diluted it, the mission itself may require evaluation, rethinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very healthy exercise. We're going to leave it there.
Okay.
All right. Cool. She is Stephanie Zasiakina, and she's director of InReach Solutions. I said it right, didn't I?
Very close. Yes. Zasiakina. You did great. Yeah.
Zasiakina.
Zasiakina.
Mm-hmm. Zasiakina.
Yes.
Yeah, that's her. Okay. And my interview with her, with Stephanie, sponsored by Network for Good, easy to use donor management and fundraising software for nonprofits. Thank you so much for being with Nonprofit Radio coverage of 18NTC.
Next week, what business is that of yours? If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.